Sorry, I'm late.
You're all right.
Not too late.
Mm-hmm. Right on time.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Another great day in COVID land. Thank you for joining us today. Looks like everybody's here. We might as well just go ahead and get started, huh? Unless there's some personal stuff you guys want to BS about for 5 minutes.
Always, Tim, always.
You know, I think we've lost our personal life, you know, so it's just
yeah.
Like,
you're in COVID land. I don't know, Doug. It really is just a part-time job, what we do here.
Well, I can't get anything else done, man. Yesterday and the day before, talk about brutal, man. I trying to be in on the Upper Yampa meeting, and then I was in the early morning. I was on the Club 20 meeting on Thursday yesterday, and then in the early morning I was on AG&C for a while, and it's just like, oh my God, this is just crazy. We should not be doing this.
Well, Doug, have you seen that the latest demand is that the commissioners donate our salaries? Have you seen
that?
No,
not all of it. Just a significant portion.
A significant portion from our local fans.
Yeah.
Although I don't know if you should. Just me and Tim, I think.
Is that because we're not working hard? Is that what the deal is?
Oh, it's a part-time
job. We don't deserve it. It's a part-time job.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, we need to start keeping track of our hours, not necessarily on the system, but yeah, it's been brutal since this whole thing started, for sure, man.
Well, I'm particularly sympathetic to you, Doug. You know, that hiring stuff is hard. That's hard work. I don't care what people think about it. I mean, you know, you're messing with people's lives and messing with the future of organizations. Speaking of which, did you guys make a selection?
Yeah, so we hired Andy Rossi, the engineer.
Okay. And,
but, you know, it was a great process. You know, we could have done that, you know, right off the bat and said, hey, you know, this is going to be our new director. But, you know, I have always felt that somebody like that needs to earn the job, and you don't need to, and, you know, it isn't a given. And that's kind of why I struggle with succession planning, because, you know, it'd get down to the end. So you've been the groomed one, and then, well, you get appointed in, you didn't like it, so then you go walk anyhow. So, you know, go back in the process again. So, no, it was a great process. Both Kelly Romero-Heaney did a great job interviewing, and, I mean, it was really, you know, really, she would have been a great addition as well. So, anyhow.
Yeah. I totally agree with you, Doug, on that no automatic succession. And I think, like we're finding out right now with our process, is we find out some things about ourselves and about our organization as we work our way through it. So, yeah, I don't think that's a waste of time or money at all. Yeah.
So the big thing that, you know, dawned on me all of a sudden, you know, we got a bunch of money sitting out there, you know, we got a big reserve, you know, we've been holding that reserve to do another reservoir in Morrison Creek. Well, that kind of went away, and we kind of missing out on demand. So we, you know, basically have $13 million reserve that we've been holding to build a $30 million reserve. So when we can just finished up the strategic plan, but we have never identified and be able to put together the budget, the strategic budget, into the budget and into the strategic plan. So we just created a new strategic plan, but we didn't include any dollars into it or how we were going to fund what to do what and align the strategic plan with a long-range visioning budget. So that's going to be the next process. Yeah.
Sounds familiar.
I can help you with that reserve balance. How about reducing rates for people getting water out of Yamcolo? I think that'd be awesome.
You guys already get such a steal right now. It's not even funny. It's just like.
All right.
Well, was that enough BSing about personal stuff for you, Tim?
Yeah, that was just about right. Okay. Especially I got to get a cheap shot in about what I pay for water out here. Mo, I think you are up to give us an update from your office.
Okay. Good morning. We had our recovery team meeting this morning. So something that's been redundant, what I'd like to do is actually just maybe open it up a bit more. I'll just cover some highlights and open up for discussion or questions. Our overall priorities, which we started off with this morning, there are five of them, community testing, and then following that, the contact tracing, notification, and isolation. Third priority was the interpretation of the protect our neighbor direction from state, followed by the developing a protect our neighbor implementation plan for the county. And then finishing up, the fifth priority is the mitigation protocol monitoring and public outreach. And I'll be adding to that, the escalatory process that Scott has been leading. I've been helping him with to make sure that our protect our neighbor criteria and our mitigation protocols are being monitored. And then I believe following the call this morning, we'll be adding the planning grant for the protect our neighbor as the overall priority as well, to get that on the street if we're going to do it and make sure that it's accurate. Also going into the meeting, we had three known capability gaps. First is the personnel to support community testing. The second was personnel support for monitoring outreach. And the third was payment for existing contact traces or obtain additional contact traces. And I believe after the meeting today, we'll be removing at least the third one about the contact traces. I'll leave the community testing on for now, but we are starting to get a few volunteers trickling in. Now our challenge is to developing a scheduling mechanism to make sure that it's efficient. We just don't have people showing up randomly and then not being able to be employed. So hopefully that will be coming off, but we still have a known gap of the personnel support for monitoring and outreach. Moving into the public outreach communication, Robin discussed her activities, which are in accordance with the work plan. We are distributing the cards to various businesses and the chamber and other places for businesses and residents and guests alike, focusing on the five commitments. I do anticipate, as the state's public order gone out for mask wearing, that there'll be a lot more questions that are coming in about that, a lot more letters to the editor. I did see the one today about some concern about hiding data. We'll get to the dashboard here in just a second about some of the data not being as readily available. But anyway, I don't really have any update, any other specific challenges for public outreach communication, other than I know there was some discussion about trying to synchronize press releases with the dashboard updates. Me and I think Robin were going to talk about that, but it's just a significant strain on resources to try to update a dashboard every time there's a single change, and then MES to then go ahead and chase that down. So we're looking at ways that we can try to synchronize that better, but right now I don't have a solution. And then I think Robin was asked to provide some updated or reach out, get some public transportation guidelines, and Emmy provided her name for that, so she can get that information. So that was the primary discussion on public outreach communication. Are there any questions or comments we'd like to go over before we move on?
I just comment on, I'll be curious to see what does happen with the mask stuff. I imagine we'll have a lot fewer questions than other places. I mean, there's not that much inconsistency in what the governor ordered and what we have been requiring. And actually, I noted this morning that I saw at least two or three gyms that have already put out information to their patrons that face masks will be required. So I think people are paying attention. And I had a question about, I saw the state order said minimum age of 10, but I don't think you guys have a minimum. And I said, nope, follow the CDC guidelines. Kids under two shouldn't wear masks. So.
Yeah, that was the what I noticed right away was that age limit, that lower age limit.
Apparently a lot of states did that, which I didn't realize. But, you know, it is what it is. And then, Mo, I don't know if you caught, just in terms of the protect our neighbors conversation, it's only vaguely related, but the governor did also yesterday suspend all new variants applications for 2 weeks. I don't know if Tim and Doug, you saw that. So yeah. I think that means that our outstanding variance request is certainly on standby for those 2 weeks, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing, but just to know for our information that that is not going to be approved in the next 2 weeks.
Refresh my memory, what was it that we had in that variance request?
Well, there was those two stages of increasing gathering sizes. The first one was basically just using a different calculation for the number of people. So the state has this really restrictive way that they're calculating how many people are allowed based on square footage. So it was same numbers, but a little bit of a difference in that would allow some of our local venues a little more flexibility. And then it was increasing the numbers at the end of July, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, given the spike nationally and with our neighbors to the south and even some of the smaller increases we've had here, I think there's an argument that could be made that we really ought to be just focusing on protect our neighbors and that framework. And maybe, I don't know if it's time to have second thoughts about those variances, but your presumption is that that variance is not going to even be addressed for at least 2 weeks.
Based on what is in the governor's order, I believe that what they said is no variance requests will be approved in the next 2 weeks. It's a little odd that we've been waiting so long already, but that's my understanding.
I guess I was reading it maybe just a little bit differently, that no more new variance requests would be entertained for consideration.
No, I did go to that local government call at 2:45, and the way that they said it there, I thought confirmed my understanding. We can reach out and double check, but yeah. That was my understanding. I think your question is a good one, and I think we should direct it to public health of do they recommend that we consider withdrawing that variance request at this time? I mean, it's obviously, we have 2 weeks, right? So we know it's not going to be, and so we can wait till a little bit later at the end of that 2 weeks. But I do, in my opinion, we should at least ask the question, especially looking at what has happened in Eagle, and they've had to kind of walk back what they were doing with reopening as a result. I think it would be good to at least ask the question.
Yeah, I really like the idea of really focusing on protect our neighbors framework and building our plan through that framework.
Well, and I think, and I don't know what the timeline would that be, but it's my understanding that if you are accepted, I guess, if you applied accepting to protect our neighbor, then variances are no longer required. You have more freedom to do what you think you need to do for the county.
Yeah.
Right, and I think there could, again, I don't know the answer. I'd like to defer to at least a recommendation from our experts. Obviously, we would make the final decision. I'd like to hear what they have to say, but, you know, should we really be engaging in further kind of reopening prior to meeting the metrics for protect our neighbors, you know, from a public health standpoint?
Yeah.
And I have no idea. I'd just like to ask the question.
Well, we're still having rising cases right now too. So, I mean, nothing seems to matter. I mean, whether protect your neighbor, is it protect your neighbor or protect our neighbor? I've seen.
I think it's our.
Yeah, I want to protect my neighbors.
I don't like my neighbors. So can I be exempt from it? But anyway, I do think we should maybe refer that question to public health to just give us some thoughts on that. And again, knowing, well, we can confirm, but assuming really we have 2 weeks, right? Like there's no reason to do anything in the next 2 weeks knowing that it's not approved. But if at the end of that 2 weeks, we still see rising cases, like, do we really think it's a good idea to have further reopening locally?
So when you say we're going to defer that to public health, are you saying we're going to defer that to Dr. Harrington or what?
Well, I meant for maybe at our public health meeting at Board of Health. So we'll still have Carrie and Dr. Harrington next week, just to make some kind of a recommendation around how, what we should do.
Or just to commence the conversation, even. Like you say, we have 2 weeks, so we can have
And while we're talking about this right now, I finally, you know, I'm catching up a little bit on emails and my email system. When you send in an email that goes in on top of somebody else, it just shows your email and it doesn't show the prior email. So I just last night read the email that we had gotten from Kendra that came through from Mark and that came through from Terry about the planning of the public health and the rest. And so I just got to that. I mean, I'd heard, known, and saw, and whatever. And, you know, I don't know. I guess somehow we're going to have to figure out how to get on top of this, you know, the whole thing. So I mean.
You mean public health staffing?
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Yeah, I think we should have some conversation with Mark about that today. I don't think we have to take Mo's time necessarily, but I agree with you. I think we definitely need to have that conversation.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's going to be a focus of our COVID-19 work session time.
Well, and again, that's all good, but Mo seems to be the recovery team. It seems to be part of the process. It's going to be, you know, partly stuck with doing that anyhow. So I guess
helping with transition.
Yeah, with help. I don't know. So I don't.
Do you want to talk about it now then? I mean, Mark, do you want to have?
We could ask Mo. I mean, they were talking about it during the recovery team a little bit. And I guess I am a little concerned here about, and then I don't know. I learn something new every day. And this stuff is COVID time and there's new COVID time. It's just like, wow, because can't keep up with it. And I can't read that fast to get through all this stuff that we're getting sometimes. But
well, I guess it would be appropriate. We do have Mo here to have him make some comment about this pending transition, what kind of challenges it presents to him. And then maybe we can quickly have a talk about how we're going to address it.
Yeah, I think that's actually a great point, Doug. I think, you know, Mo obviously and the recovery team will be impacted by that transition. So it would be good to have him involved in the conversation.
So great, Mo, let's hear your solution to the problem.
I did mention at the last recovery team that I wanted to meet with Carrie and now Michelle for a transition plan, and it was not a staffing effort, though. It was really just where realizing that sometimes these hiring actions may take some time, going over the activities within that virus suppression line of operation and make sure that we've identified either a person or a process to get those activities done. So we were scheduled to meet yesterday. I had a reschedule, so I'll be meeting with Carrie and Michelle this afternoon. So I don't think, at least until I sit down and have that conversation, unfortunately, I don't think I have any recommendations at this point. Just mostly concerned with those key activities and talking to them first to see what some potential solutions are short term and long term.
So I guess my thinking here is a little bit that this isn't necessarily public health, but it's an emergency situation, and that's why I kind of, you know, I'm just struggling to figure out how we're gonna, and again, Mark, you probably have some ideas here too, but how we're gonna throw some people at it and make sure it's legitimate and that we know what we're doing, and we have homes for them, and we, you know, a bona fide effort that we're putting forward here. And like I said, I apologize for not reading that email from, you know, Carrie came back you know, June 7th or something like that. And then Beth, your reply was on 7/7, you know, really asking where the hell, well, come we haven't done anything yet on this. And now we're here on 7/17 and we still haven't done a lot to do. Mark wants to talk. So I'll blame stupid here because I didn't get a chance to read all that stuff. That was going to kind of caught me off guard, public health education and the rest. And
don't worry, Doug. We can always blame staff. So
well, no, it's just I just needed to get my arms around a plan and trying to get, you know, get my arms around something that I could understand, and it just kept. And again, I realize it's a pandemic and everything's exploding day by day, and it's just massive explosions here. So, but anyhow, I'll let Mark say something. Thank you.
Thanks, commissioners. And I think this is a very important topic. And quite frankly, as I think we've discussed even through this week, it's the number one priority right now for what we're doing administratively. I know it is certainly within the human resource realm. We have an interview this afternoon at 4:15 with what I'll classify as an extremely strong candidate for our interim public health director. We've got a great interview team that is lined up to participate in that interview this afternoon. At the conclusion of that interview, we're going to ask the interview panel to stay on so that we can discuss that candidate in a little bit more detail and then talk about next steps going forward, hopefully in a circumstance where we've got a pathway for an interim solution as Carrie leaves the position on July 24th. Because of course, we've got that very narrow 2-week notice that we've got to fill that gap as quickly as possible. We have advertised and received applications, in fact, several qualified applications for the epidemiologist/data manager position. We will begin interviews next week for that. I believe Beth, in addition to helping us today in today's interview panel, we've asked her to step forward and help us with the epidemiologist position as well as Dr. Harrington. Those are two critical pieces going forward that we feel we're going to be in a position to fill and to fill very quickly. As Kathy mentioned to you this week, we have hired and onboarded 4 contact tracers. We have a goal of 9 contact tracers, and we feel confident that with 40 applications in the queue that we're going to be in good shape as far as that's concerned. We are going to come back to you next week and talk to you in more detail about the health educators. We've also put that advertisement out the board as we talked about last week, or out the door as we talked about last week. That is something that we want to visit with you about. I believe maybe Kathy has that queued up for as early as Wednesday of next week in concert with your Board of Health meeting. Commissioners, I'll be very honest and very direct. It's a challenge. It's a challenge when we have this big a transition in such a narrow window of time. But we are gonna do our very best to go ahead and get qualified people in here, get them trained up, get them onboarded, and do the best we possibly can in working with everybody as a team. And I have every confidence that we're gonna do that. So I didn't get a chance to go ahead and chime in on the recovery call today. Everybody cut off a little bit early, but one of the things that I was gonna try and just reinforce for everybody today is, stay the course. We know this is difficult. We know this is challenging, but at the same time, we want to put the right people and the right resources on the front lines. We're doing that right now, and it's going to be able to make a difference for our community. But have faith, stick with us, stay the course. We're going to have success on this. And with that, I'll answer any questions from the commissioners.
Yeah, I don't have a question so much as a comment. As part of the onboarding process, I would suggest that we encourage these new employees to stay within their own capacity and capabilities. And God bless these people that are willing to jump through hoops and work massive hours to address the pandemic. But as we were finding out, it's just simply not sustainable. So you know, just say, hey, people, you need to take care of yourselves. And if you can't fully take care of yourself, then you're not going to be able to take care of the community. So that's my comment.
Did you guys already discuss Michelle's situation too?
No.
We know about it. I don't know what there is to discuss. I guess that was going to be my question. Are we going to go ahead and post that position right away?
I believe that we should post that position right away.
Yeah.
I just didn't know if there was an alternative that you all were looking at.
I have no interest in trying to come up with alternatives. I think Mark's comments are spot on. We have been in the process of building the right structure. It's unfortunate and challenging that we're now losing people, but that doesn't change the structure that we believe is going to make this department successful.
Yeah, I don't know whether we really knew what the structure was going to be, and I'm still a little concerned about, you know, public health, and then now this being an emergency and the rest, and again, making sure we get somebody that's in there can administer, you know, administrate the department too. And you know, so there's a little bit of fine line between a nurse and being registered nurse and being running a department. And so I want to make sure that we have all the resources going there, however we need to do that, so.
Doug, that's a good point. And let me reinforce another aspect of this that I did not mention a few minutes ago. One of the requisite skills that we think we need to have within that department, within public health, is we need to have good, strong oversight of the business operations, because there's all of those administrative tasks and chores that have to be carried on while you've got your public health field work that also has to be maintained. So we need to make sure that we've got that strong, strong business side of the house to make sure that that's going to be operational and functional. We're providing some backfill for that right now, but we're also going to do a very strong assessment to see if we need to build that up so that, again, we can allow our public health director to really focus on the most important public health field duties that they've got. Last thing is, and I know I've mentioned this a few times this week, we are right now identifying the space allocation resources that we feel will best fit as we staff up and we build this architecture. We also need to put those people in the very best space they can to do their jobs and do their jobs well. So between their office space, the supplies, the testing kits, maybe even the opportunity to test in a mobile standpoint, we are identifying some locations for that. We hope to bring something back to you early next week, which I think is going to be a good, strong recommendation. So we've got some good leads, and we're making some good headway on that as well.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it. I think that's what we need. We need some kind of a plan out there that we're all doing. So, yeah.
I guess I want to just also, I'm making an assumption, and I think this is a safe one, but if you could just confirm, Mark, that, you know, you're going to be pretty hands-on in getting this department rebuilt / built for the first time and making sure that whatever is going on there, that we don't have a repeat of, you know, 100% turnover of the department anytime soon.
Beth, I know it's an overused term, but it's for me right now, it's job one.
How many job ones do you have, Mark?
Well, let me just put it, it's job 1A. So we'll put it that way.
Sounds good.
And if I could just interject, and I've talked to Mark about this a little bit, but it seems like, you know, if there are opportunities to offload some of those responsibilities, and I guess specifically testing, I don't have a good handle on, you know, what can we reduce or eliminate the testing that the county does? And I don't know the answer to that question, but I'm seeking more support in the community to take that burden away from the county a little bit. It seems like that would be something that could be helpful and just to take some of the burden off of public health.
Scott, I think that's a work in progress too. I mean, I know Carrie and Brian have been working on that. I don't think we have to get into the weeds on that in this call, but.
Yeah, we need help from our partners. We've identified that for some time.
And that's listed in that Protect Our Neighbors document, I believe, you know, is getting the additional support within those things.
So yeah. When, you know, it's kind of like fits into my scheme of life too, that I got to have my fingers on everything and got to have my hands on everything. So Carrie, I think somehow, you know, maybe it isn't necessarily that, you know, Carrie and that public health and figure out how we can get some help doing that as well. I totally agree. And, you know, Carrie wanted to be in, nicely just, you know, just she was doing the job. And then again, as Tim said, you know, basically running herself ragged. So, and I'm sympathetic. So anyhow, we need to figure out how we can do that. And that doesn't necessarily mean that, anyhow, that'll all be part of you guys' conversation. So
I think those are important things to think about, you know, I wouldn't say anything negative about Carrie, but just things to think about as we're identifying a successor. And I feel optimistic that we actually are going to have some good choices. You know, I think when we first went into this, I was really nervous that we were going to end up with whatever we could find. But definitely, as Mark said, I think this candidate we're interviewing this afternoon, from review of resume is a really, and actually I have this person is, a former colleague of a friend who works in public health in Denver, and he has spoken very highly of this individual as well. So I feel good about that. And then whether that person ends up being the long-term replacement or not, I mean, I think we hopefully will have the ability to really find the right person to pick some of these pieces up.
Very good. Mo, you want to continue with the rest of your update, or are you done with your update, just still looking for questions?
No, I'll just go through the other lines of operation real quick. For data management, you know, Amy continues to update the dashboard weekly. We do have a new dashboard, which is now posted to the website, so that's been a change. And then Amy and I were working on a quantitative performance measurement as our time allowed, because I know it was low priority, but it appears that especially if we go into Protect Our Neighbor and the metrics that are provided there, then that's going to basically trump those efforts, and we'll be developing, updating that dashboard for the new Protect Our Neighbor metrics. For the mitigation protocols line of operation, Scott and his department continue to perform that function. This morning he briefed that we just reached the 100 mark of 100 businesses that have been visited, and we're still hovering about the 86% compliance. And he continues, or his department continues, to do restaurant inspections as well. From a PPE management perspective, we still continue to receive some supplies, although we're trying to track down a missing shipment of gowns. But our distributions have been fairly low, so we are comfortable with our PPE level. I would say the biggest challenge that we have, and I think this is only going to increase, particularly now that we have a state order on 100% mask wearing when indoors and whatnot, we're going to continue to have to do this monitoring, and so we are going to be challenged. We're getting some resources in for the community testing, like I said previously, but we're still going to need a lot more resources to do the community monitoring or the protocol monitoring and public outreach if we're going to do that mission effectively. Scott is also leading the effort, and I've been helping a little bit on the escalation procedures, identifying about four or five steps of everything from initial public outreach and monitoring all the way to the enforcement possibilities if required to make sure that our businesses and our public are adhering to the protocols. And I think, Scott, did you say you're presenting that on Wednesday?
Yeah, I'm pulling everything together. I'm gonna chat with Mark about it today and send him some of the materials, and then be ready to chat with the board of health about it on Wednesday.
Okay, that's what I thought. Thank you.
Mo, I have a question on the monitoring, and maybe this question could also be answered by Scott, but as we're trying to move forward with kind of engaging partners on providing resources and support, I guess it would be really helpful to know, to identify a goal for monitoring. You know, do we want to be able to visit X number of businesses a week, or do we want X number of hours of monitoring a week? Just what is, can we quantify the gap between what we have now and what we would like to have? I think that would be helpful in figuring out where those resources might come from.
You know, I sat down with Mo yesterday to go over this presentation, and upon his recommendation, we added a slide that explains just that. So I have to give a lot of credit to Mo there for being on top of that one, and we'll talk about it more on Wednesday.
That's good, because I think, I mean, I'll just put on my Doug hat for a minute. I mean, it's what's the objective, right? So, you know, it's not just more, but what are we really, what do we believe is sufficient? And we're not able to really do it unless we have that information.
Yeah, and I still like the educational part of it and not the regulatory part of it. And I realize, you know, the 86%, well, that's a pretty damn good percentage to me, I really think. And so even with a mandate mask thing, so I just, those last, that incremental gain sometimes are the hardest and the most costly. So I just want to make sure we're, and again, just not being, you know, in your face, that we're just trying to be educational and trying to convince everybody that's that the investment in our recovery. So
I told Scott this too. There was Scott and that La Plata. So La Plata County had a slideshow that I had reached out to some commissioners and asked for their anything they had put together with regards to enforcement. And I've been forwarding that to Scott and Eric. And La Plata County had put together a slideshow where they really talked about what their goals and their priorities were in terms of enforcement. I mean, they had a lot of other stuff in there, but that was one thing that stood out to me. I think everybody kind of thinks of this as like, we need to get people to wear masks, or like we need, you know, but I don't think the goal is to be the mask police. And one of the things in that La Plata County document that I really appreciated is that they really talked about prioritized efforts in terms of what presents the most risk from a public health standpoint, at not like what are people most likely to be defiant on, right? But what creates the most risk from a public health standpoint? And then they had a list of priorities in terms of enforcement that aligned with that. And individuals wearing masks was last on that list, which makes sense, right? Because one person not wearing a mask in a restaurant is not really the priority from a public health standpoint. You know, they really started with like businesses that aren't supposed to be open are open. Like that's the number one priority, right? Businesses are above the capacity that they're supposed to be at. You know, social distancing measures aren't in place. Like the things that actually present the highest level of risk to public health, and they really did prioritize that. And I think just because masks are so politically loaded and because they're the thing that people are wanting to defy most strongly, that doesn't mean that they're our number one priority for enforcement. I really think I appreciated that kind of way that La Plata County laid that out from a public health standpoint. You know, the goal really is to protect public health. The goal isn't compliance in and of itself.
Well, I used that as a template, Beth, so hopefully I capture that in the same way, and certainly we'll talk about that and make sure that we have everything right. And just in response to Doug's comments, for sure our emphasis is on education and, you know, be able to motivate or incentivize voluntary compliance. And we, you know, only have these you know, incremental measures I don't see that, I think it's going to be very, very rare, but at least that they're there and people know they're there, that we have these more severe measures if we have to go there, but I think that we can do almost all of it, you know, through education and support and outreach and things like that. And so that's certainly the goal.
And I think just one other follow-up on why I made my comments. I think that if we are asking for support from others, whether it's law enforcement or it's other staff or whatever, whoever it is, I think people might, you know, it was interesting, Doug, you were on the policy call, you know, when Kathy Meyer said, well, we don't want to just be the mask police. And I think if people have the perception that that's what this is just walking around and telling people to put their masks on, I understand why they don't want to do it. I wouldn't want to do it. And I think, so if we can sort of frame it in what the goals are, you know, really it's not about walking around and telling people to put their masks on and writing their name on the chalkboard if they don't have their masks on. So I think that'll be helpful for framing from the standpoint of identifying more people who might be able to help participate too.
Yeah, and I think that's really why we didn't get some of that support a few months ago, because that was the perception. And so we got to kind of change the perception about, you know, what that means and what the expectations are, and, you know, get buy-in from municipalities. And I think that that'll help overall.
It stood out to me, Scott, when you shared with the restaurants the list of the most frequent violations. And if I remember correctly, you listed like 5 or 6 things, and masks weren't even on your list when you read it out to that group. You know, it was contact tracing logs. It was, you know, it was, that hasn't, anyway.
Yeah, and just keep in mind that, you know, we have to make appointments for all of our site visits. And so it may not be as representative as it is in the real world. And so that's why we need some additional help with that surveillance. And I just think having that presence, that oversight presence in the community, knowing that that presence exists, I think that that'll go a long way towards, you know, keeping things on the level.
And plus, Scott, you haven't done any after business hours on weekends, is that correct?
No. And you know, Tim talked about managing workload and work-life balance, and that's kind of the issue with our staff is we're trying to maintain that too and work within our capacity. And so, you know, finding other ways to fill that gap has been one of the goals.
Carry on with the rest of your update, Bo.
Okay. Moving on to virus suppression. We've already spent a lot of time. The biggest challenge is our staffing, but I know about Mark already provided, you know, the way ahead and the plan for that, so we can skip most of that. We do have some notes that we're discussing. I know State put out a new modeling system or update yesterday, and as to no one's surprise, we are seeing an uptick in cases statewide. We did look at determine this morning how we're going to do a volunteer schedule. So we indicated that if you are talking to other jurisdictions and they offer up people, have them send them to me or contact me, and I'll be developing some sort of a schedule until we get some replacements on board. And then Carrie did mention that, you know, we early on during the EOC, we had a specific priority for the vulnerable populations task force. And she just didn't want us to lose sight of the fact that we still had that vulnerable population out there. So I know there's a meeting on Mondays. I asked Carrie to send me the information so that I can start participating once again until we get replacements on board, and Carrie Littman to get that information as well to make sure that they're getting the necessary PPE. So we'll be participating in those Monday meetings until we get some replacements that can take that back over. So we'll make sure we stay focused on them. And then finally, the finance and administration line of operation, still progressing with collecting invoices, preparing our FEMA PA package. There was just one question from Dan that He needs to talk to Chuck Sullivan, and it's not so much about FEMA, PA, and CARES Act specifically, but more of a sequence of events. So Dan needs to go figure out exactly. We can use CARES Act for the 25% cost match, but then some of these, there was also some, I guess, statements made in a webinar that FEMA requires other more specific programs, I should say, or programs with more specific requirements to be used first. And so not really sure how that would work if you're going to apply for the FEMA PA and use the CARES Act for 25% cost match. So Dan is going to be reaching out to Chuck Sullivan from CDPHE on that and make sure we get some clarification. So that was the big thing for finance administration. And then the last Protect Our Neighbor implementation, Commissioner Melton is working that document. She indicated that you did get some input and make some adjustments to that. And like I said, I started off this, that one of our new priorities will be putting together a scope of work or a package for the planning grant that is made available through the state. So I guess, pending your questions, that's all I have.
I have one question and then another question and a comment. First of all, I watched the governor's news conference yesterday, and I sat in for most of the local government call yesterday. And certainly the modeling that was presented by Dr. Herlihy was pretty sobering, especially the ICU and hospitalization capacity that, if things don't improve pretty dramatically here pretty shortly, it's pretty clear we're going to be getting back into that situation where we're going to exceed hospital capacity. And I know we've talked about this quite a bit with you, Mo. We've taken down our setup at the hockey rink. And I also know that generally the concept was to rely upon the resources that the state was providing for that. But hopefully you have in the back of your mind, in an emergency situation, what you would have to do to stand up an overflow facility.
So we still have, so while we did move the beds out of the hockey rink, we still have them here in Steamboat. They're at the old dispatch spaces. Combination of there as well as up in the SAR barn. So they're still somewhat local, and they only take minutes to set up. So from that perspective, we're basically as ready as we were before. And then our mass casualty trailers and these hospital surge trailers, they are, Carrie Littman and I loaded some of the stuff back in there, but they are still parked at the ice rink as well. So once again, wouldn't take long to set that back up. The biggest determining factor will again once be is the UC Health YVMC willing to provide oversight to these facilities, and that will remain the question as we go forward of whether they're willing to do that, because that's going to be a prerequisite to actually opening and operating those facilities as alternate care facilities. So we'll, as we track the numbers and track the hospital utilization as even as part of Protect Our Neighbor, I'll have to keep engaging with them on how they want to do that.
I have just one other follow-up on that, Mo. Am I right that the hospital has their own surge plan that does not rely on our resources? So this would really be if their surge capacity were exhausted, correct?
Was that to me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, they do. They have a surge plan which will include things like shutting down re-shutting down non-essential surgeries, using some of those rooms and all threat capacity,
even putting beds in, you know, hallways and stuff like that. So they do have an internal surge plan. And then part of their surge plan also relies on the UC health system and the statewide system in general, where they would transport certain patients out at the, as required. So yes, the surge plan where the county would be involved is really secondary to their own internal surge plan.
So on that use of the UC health system, does that also imply that if other UC health facilities were reaching capacity, that people could be transported here? I would think.
I guess I would say theoretical, but I think most of the time, really, it's going to be to the front range, those hospitals with larger capacities. I know there's, I forget the name, but the one in Grand Junction is a primary location as well. And then the state, in addition to the large alternate care facilities that they stood up, did, I believe, procure a fleet of ambulances that could do transport if required. So, you know, that surge plan is really using the alternate care facilities established by state and then using their transportation system to get them there.
So the bottom line is, Mo, is that, for lack of a better phrase, any surge plan that we think we might try to put into place is at the mercy of what UC Health is willing to do.
Well, yes, I would say so. And but of course, if you ask UC Health, they're going to say that they need and I don't know the specifics, but they need some sort of executive order from the governor to do that. So there's a little bit of pointing going back and forth about you know, what is required or who, you know, who are we waiting on, but ultimately an alternate care facility within Route County needs to be under the umbrella of the local hospital. That's what it comes down to.
So the answer to my question, at least from Route County's perspective, is that you're prepared to do what needs to be done in the event of an emergency in partnership with the state and with UC Health.
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's good enough for me.
Well, can I just, if I could belabor this point for a minute, as you know I'm inclined to do. So Mo, I understood that they needed some kind of authorization from CDPHE. They were challenged in getting that. And then I heard you say, who's waiting on who? But are we really waiting, or is this just no longer being pursued? And is it something that needs to be renewed as something that's pursued rather than waiting? I hope we don't get to this point, right? But you certainly don't want to deal with it when, you know, when you're getting ready to put a refrigerator truck out back, to be sort of morbid about it.
Well, you know, that's actually a good question, because, you know, maybe I did mislead you unintentionally when I said waiting. So for a long time, I was regularly talking to Drew Peterson at the state, who's reaching out and trying to find out what they're going to do about this agreement. And what it eventually, I think, boiled down to, although it wasn't specifically stated, is that with the large alternate care facilities that were built up at the convention center and building the hospital over at St. Mary's, I think it is, that there wasn't a lot of incentive to pursue those agreements like we talked about. So, yes, I would say it was more of a submission to the fact that if we have a medical surge that exceeded UC Health's or YVMC's internal surge, then we had a default really to the plan of just moving them to one of the state alternate care facilities. So, you know, presuming may be a bad term. I think we've become relinquished to the fact that we're going to be reliant on the state alternate care facilities.
Well, that sounds like there's a good plan A, a decent plan B, and kind of a vacant plan C right at the moment that my guess is will come back up as a priority for everybody to talk about if we continue to see this increased disease spread. So hopefully we won't have to talk about this again, but I guess we're going to have to be prepared to talk about it again.
No, I just have one other very quick question on this. When I was on the policy call the other day, and I think it was the week you were gone, so you didn't hear this question, but there was a question of when from the city, when can we have the hockey rink back? And I guess I thought that we were not holding them up on using the hockey rink any longer. But I let them know that I would just ask you that question.
Well, that's actually pretty frustrating. And I'll go back through my emails. I already had an email exchange with, I thought it was Angela or somebody, but I specifically told them that we will not need the ice rink, that we've already pulled our, Carrie and I boxed up everything at that point, though we didn't have the capability to move it. And since then, Public Works has moved all the beds and mattresses and stuff out of there. I think the only thing remaining in there was a box of oxygen equipment, because that needs to be a little bit more carefully handled and whatnot. So I specifically told them about at least 2 weeks ago, if not 3 weeks ago, that we are vacating that and it no longer require it.
So, Mo, I'm guessing it's just a communication issue, because this came from one of the city council. The question came from one of the city councilors. And so clearly this person, this city council member, was under the impression that that was the reason they weren't having rec league hockey. And so,
nothing more important than rec league hockey.
Well, to some constituents, yes. So I think it'll just be important that their staff communicates to them about the actual reasons that they are not having rec league hockey, so that they can portray that information accurately.
Yeah, so I communicated with Alexis Wolf, who's the recreation manager for the city of Steamboat Springs, on June 30th, that from the EOC standpoint, we have no problem with the city installing ice and opening up to user groups. So
okay, I'll just communicate that I've confirmed that with you, and they can work with their own staff if they have questions.
And then my second question might be more to you, Commissioner Melton, but also Mo as well, and anybody else, is do we have any idea of how long it's going to take to complete the process to where, if we choose to enter Protect Our Neighbors, we could?
You mean like the application process?
Right, let's just say, for sake of argument, that we were really committed and we really wanted to enter Protect Our Neighbors. How long would it actually take us to get there? I mean, in my mind, a multi-week process.
Well, I think all the work we're doing right now, you know, there's more than one way to answer the question. If the answer is just about how long it's going to take to write the plan, I think it depends on how we choose to do that. If we want to pay someone, which was Carrie's suggestion, you know, pay an outside person, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 or whatever to put this together for us, I imagine we could outline the timeline that we think is appropriate for that person to do that work. And I would think, you know, maybe a week, 2 weeks, something like that, just for the actual drafting of the plan. The biggest thing is putting in place the things that are going to go into the plan, which is really what we're working on now. But I think the writing of the actual plan could be completed fairly quickly once we do all that other stuff.
So that was a nice way of not actually answering the question.
Well, I think the answer is it depends, Tim. If we wanted to do it today, it would take us significantly longer, because there's work to be done on some of the things that are going to go into the plan. But once that work is completed, the writing of the plan, I don't think is the limiting step, I guess.
But that work that needs to be done is going to be a multi-week process. Is that fair to say?
I think, yeah, absolutely. I think so.
All right, that's good enough for me.
Well, and basically we have to get on a descending rate of infection too. So, I mean,
yeah.
We'll be sending paper if we don't have a better community.
Yeah.
So just paper.
I think obviously we need to fully take advantage of the time that we have now while we're not eligible to be ready, so that it's not like, oh, now we're eligible and now it's going to take us two more months, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Any other, we're running quite a bit over schedule here. We have several other items to deal with. Mo, do you have anything more to add? And commissioners, do you have any more questions for Mo?
I have nothing else to add.
Oh, okay. I'm seeing shaking heads, so.
I didn't have anything else. And Mo, thanks for the feedback on the wildland fire too. So great, thank you.
All right.
You're thanks. Welcome.
We're ready to move on to our next item, which is a request to hire a patrol sergeant above step one. Kathy? Kathy? Doug?
I'm here. No, I'm here. I just...
Oh.
give me 2 seconds to just pull up my document here. I apologize.
That's okay.
Hopefully. I'm here.
Hey, Doug. Okay.
So Doug and I are here because he is requesting to hire a Brent Hudstead at step 5 of the patrol sergeant pay scale. Mr. Hunstead meets the educational work experience requirements to be hired at step 5. He has a Bachelor of Science, is post-certified, and has over 12 years of relevant experience, 7 years more than is required. His education also exceeds the minimum requirements. In addition, he has earned numerous law enforcement certifications. The county manager has reviewed this request and approved placing this request on the agenda for your consideration and approval. And I apologize, there is a typo in the background information where I listed step 5 of the patrol deputy, and it really should be patrol sergeant.
Thank you. Doug, do you have anything you want to add to that?
The only thing I'd like to add is... just kind of a kudos to myself and our agency. This is the third person we've recruited from the Steamboat Police Department. It's usually the other way around. So we're really excited to have him on board.
Great. It's gratifying to see you guys begin to fill some of these open positions, and speaks well of the work you're doing over there and what I'm guessing that you're able to portray the Rock County Sheriff's Department as an attractive place to work.
I sure hope so. It seems that way. We've been getting a lot more applications as of late, and some very good qualified applicants as well. So,
great. Commissioners, any questions for Kathy or Doug?
I don't have any questions. Thanks for taking the time to work on this. And I'm glad you're able to find some folks to fill these positions. I know that's been a challenge.
Thank you.
Kudos to you for giving yourself compliments. always a good way to use a meeting.
Well, and especially to fill a sergeant's job. So that's great. Yeah.
Yes.
Leadership role. So for sure.
Great. I think sounds like someone ought to be making a motion here.
Yep. Mr. Chair, I would move that we approve the request to hire a patrol sergeant at step 5 of the pay scale, specifically Mr. Hunstead.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Doug, Kathy, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Hey,
Doug.
Thank
you. Have a good weekend.
I don't think an appointment form has been sent to us yet because we hadn't determined the salary, but do you mind going ahead and having Kim complete one of those for us?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Let's go ahead and move on to our capital project discussion. I see Ray and Gio here with us. Ray, Gio, who wants to lead this discussion?
I'll go ahead and start it off. we gave a presentation on the 9th of the general, what we're looking at generally to add back into the budget. It would require a supplemental budget request since it was removed from the budget. So that's why we're asking for budget approval. And I just want to give kudos to myself for doing such a great job. Actually, I want to give kudos to Mike and Gio on that overlay when they did the estimate for what we thought and what I presented the other day. They were 99.8% accurate. In other words, they were right there. And so the $520,000 still stands. So you'll notice, and I don't expect you to remember everything I went over last time because we had several other items, but there were some things that upon further review that we had, that I had overlooked. Of course, we needed gravel to do the shouldering once we do the overlay. That's the gravel that goes on the sides of the road. And then we'll have to stripe County Road 36. We do not stripe that section of 18. And so those were the two main things. But the big piece of the puzzle that was missing last time was the revenue side. And so that's why Dan Strenat is here today to say, can we afford this? And then if we can afford it, then hopefully you all will agree that it's something we should do.
Well, I, for one, am anxiously looking forward to the answer to that question.
Dan? Dan should start talking. Okay. I'm going to share a screen here just real quick. And so you guys, so you should be able to see some green and red stuff, right?
Yep, we got it.
Okay. So big picture here with major governmental revenues or governmental activity revenues. You know, we've saw a lot of positive indicators. I mean, all this green is a good sign. And the only revenue that we have out there that is not probably showing a positive indicator is HUTF so far. And then, so for June 2020, we're still seeing an unfavorable 28% okay out there. But, and then everything else has a favorable indicator. So right now, I mean, even though we're like in, you know, June, May with our numbers and stuff like that, it's still kind of early in the process, but we got a lot of favorable indicators there. And then the other thing here that we're looking at is the hours worked from home base. That was those graphs I presented a few weeks ago. And we're still seeing some really nice numbers coming through. I mean, Colorado as a whole is still seeing a 3% increase. And then, you know, some of these ones I highlighted here, I mean, leisure is like 80% above. I mean, that's hard to believe what we're looking at there, but you know, that's 45% from the beginning of the month to the end of the month. And the transportation is a lagger out there a little bit, but it is improving quite a bit. So that's where I'm thinking that even that HUTF number is going to improve maybe, you know, like in July and stuff like that. But this is a, you know, a lot of people are going back to work and that kind of thing. You know, we did do the COVID supplemental budget, so that tightened things up quite a bit. And then we also have, you know, the CDPHE funding, we got FEMA funding, and we also have the CARES Act relief funding. And then at the end of the year, we'll also probably still have some favorable budget variances. My biggest idea out there is like, you know, like I think was brought up earlier today in one of the Board of County Commissioners meeting is like, you know, will we have a second wave that's gonna do something to us to shut down the economy or something like that? And then what's gonna happen with the 2021 ski season? I mean, that's a Megatron Triple Crown event. And will we have a vaccine? So I don't know if I'm giving you an answer there because I don't know this future part. I mean, if we were to look at right now, we feel pretty good, but that future thing out here in, you know, during ski season and what that may, how that may impact us could have significant effects yet.
Go ahead, Tim.
Dan, so we're looking at, what is it? And I apologize, I did miss last Friday's meeting when you guys had the bigger discussion about the capital projects. But what we're looking at here today is approximately $1 million, practically speaking, in terms of additional expenses. Refresh my memory, Dan, that $1 million, how does that relate to our original projections of revenue shortfalls?
Well, we were looking at that, you know, that basically that 11% or 3.8 million. And then okay. We did, you know, a lot of different cuts and stuff like that out there to, you know, with this COVID supplemental budget. And we got like what we're showing here, we got a lot of favorable budget or favorable governmental activity revenue variances out there. So that's a positive sign. And like I said, it's looking like, you know, like with the hours worked, our economy is picking up. And then we got this, all this different funding that we got from the various different funding sources out there that have helped us out. So I'm sitting there saying 2020 is looking really good. It's just a matter of like, what do we think is going to happen, you know, with ski season? And that's my, you know, that's kind of the elephant in the room, if anything. I mean, if we want to look right now and say we're good, you know, we can go forward and do this.
But practically speaking, ski season doesn't impact the 2020 budget at this point very much.
No. Well,
yeah, that's a 2021 issue.
December, you know, December is a big month, but it'll be, you know, it'll still be interesting to see what happens. Or, you know, like if there's a second wave that shuts things down, I don't, you know, that's the only thing that we don't, you know, it's still this uncertainty thing out here. We don't know what we're getting ourselves into.
But to my way of thinking, we identified close to $4 million of revenue shortfalls. We're beginning to think that there just won't be that much of a revenue shortfall. And we're being pretty conservative here, only moving forward with approximately a million, restoring approximately $1 million worth of capital items. And then again, I apologize for not being here last Friday. I thought we were already doing overlays on County Road 18, that we had not cut those from the budget.
Partially correct. So what we have in the budget right now, the revised budget, is County Road 18, Tim, from, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mike and Gio, but from 131 to 14B. And so what we're adding now, and I think that's about 3.5 miles. And then, so what we're adding now is from 14B out to Sarvis Creek. And.
Whoa. We're not paving out to Sarvis Creek.
So yeah, that's the one that's been chip sealed past the.
Oh.
Hey, and not the minimal maintenance section that we close every year.
Yeah.
Tim, we made a lot of big decisions on that.
Yeah.
We're gonna asphalt all the way up to that
all the way to the dam.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
So you're gonna be a 4-lane highway.
You've added some additional mileage on 18 that was not in the revised budget.
Yeah, and actually, Tim, the good work that Mike and Janet did, and Gio several years ago, maybe Gio was involved, but where Janet put together and working with accounting the replacement schedule for the chip and the asphalt and all that stuff. I believe, Mike, is it correct that this section was not included? That was an overlooked section, so it wasn't even in our replacement. So actually, Kevin Gneiser and Pete brought this to our attention, as well as Kevin Gneiser, while he was going around looking at the patch job this year, when he was looking at that section of County Road 36 from Soda Creek up to the end of pavement, up toward the hot springs. He was saying, hey, if we don't know for sure it's going to be included in the 2021 budget, he really was going to suggest a lot of patch on that road this year. And so rather than putting down patch, we'd be much better off by doing an overlay on that. So the one thing, Tim, that I'll explain as well. So the overlay on 36, since it was overlaid before, it'll take 2 inches of asphalt. And since this will be the first time that section of 18 from 14B out to the end of pavement has been paved. I believe it was just a double chip, right, Mike? So it'll be 3 inches of asphalt.
Double chipped and probably Rao County overlaid in a couple spots. Beth, to bring you up to speed, a Rao County overlay is we dump the asphalt out onto the road out of the trucks, and then we use our blades to smooth it instead of a professional asphalt company that has the machine that lays it down and all the compaction and so on.
Don't get me wrong.
Sounds good to me. Yeah. I have a couple questions. So Dan, I think the biggest question for me, I mean, I don't think anyone here is expecting you to predict what's going to happen in the pandemic. I don't think any of us know how to predict that. You know, you kept referring to a second wave. Technically speaking, we're still in the first wave. And it doesn't seem to be going anywhere. So I guess my real question is, let's assume the worst case scenario, the ski area doesn't open, there's another stay at home order. Are we shooting ourselves in the foot by adding these back in, or do you feel comfortable that based on the revenue, the revised revenue projections over, given what's happened the last couple of months, that we would still be okay? I mean, I don't want to end up in October and then we're like, oh shoot, we really shouldn't have reallocated that money. So, you know, what's the worst case scenario here? And do you feel like we're okay even in that worst case scenario?
Well, okay, if we're saying that the ski area would not open, or it was told to stay closed, or whatever, however that's put, that would be huge. That would be shooting ourselves in the foot if we predict that. If we, you know, predict something like a 30% decrease in the ski area or something like that, that's probably, we're going to probably be okay, something like that. I just don't know what that number is right now, but that's probably, I'm just trying to say that that's our risk area, is ski season out there. And then if there's another wave, which I, like you said, we don't have that wave yet, but if it does happen, what does that mean? And I don't know what that means either. But
Dan, let's introduce another very important component here. And we touched on it ever so briefly last week, but let's reinforce that. We got extremely good news from Kevin at the airport that the FAA had indeed allowed us to go ahead and use CARES Act FAA money to repay that debt to Route County. So we will indeed see that revenue, which is just, I think, just a skosh short of $1 million. Dan, I think it's like 958. But that in its own right, which is kind of unexpected revenue, could really serve as commissioners, the backfill for these particular capital projects, which again are about $1 million in total.
Oh, I completely agree with that. I mean, what I'm saying though is like we got part of the future out there that's very uncertain. And you know, if we're just looking at 2020, you know, let's go do all this stuff. But I don't, you know.
I'm only asking about 2020, Dan. I'm not asking you to tell us about 2021, because as you pointed out, we cut almost $4 million. We're talking about adding back in almost $1 million. And I just want to know, in a worst case scenario in December, right? I'm just talking about 2020. Are we going to say, oh my God, we really shouldn't have done that? Or, you know, given what Mark's saying, it sounds like that probably wouldn't happen. I understand 2021, who knows? And we'll have to talk about that. But I'm just asking, if we have the worst case scenario between now and the end of 2020, will we still feel like it was an okay idea to add these back in?
Well, in December, we're going to know about the ski season, probably, right? What's going to happen there to a certain extent. So, right now we can look at these positive indicators and say that we're going to be okay going through the end of the year, and you should go ahead and do your additional capital improvements.
Dan, you're answering a different question than I'm asking.
No.
You are. I'm not asking you to tell me whether we're going to be okay through the end of 2020. I'm asking, given our revenue projections, and if we have a worst case scenario between now and the end of the year, are the things that have happened that were more favorable than when we made all these cuts, would we still feel comfortable that adding this $1 million back in is okay? So now we've basically only made $3 million in cuts from our 2020 budget instead of the $4 million in cuts.
We could be okay.
He's not going to give you a yes or no, Beth. And
I heard Mark basically give us a yes based on the FAA.
Frankly speaking, Beth, if the whole world shuts down and the economy completely crashes starting tomorrow, then yeah, we're going to wish we hadn't done this. So it's a calculated risk. I don't think that we can say that things are going to be fine. And to quote my favorite philosopher, Yogi Berra, the future ain't what it used to be. So we just have no idea what's going to happen out there. All we can do is make an educated guess.
Remind us all that the $520,000 for the overlay on 18 and 36 is already in the pool. It's in the savings account. We got it there. It's not, we were going to be robbing from the pool anyhow if we were going to use that for operational money. So, and then the second thing, so the only thing we're really adding to the operational budget is the increase of the $25,000 on the shouldering that wasn't probably in the dollars, and then the striping, and then the big one would be the $300,000 that we had for the remodel of the communication center. So I'm just reminding myself and everybody that we already had that money set aside. We shouldn't be using it for operational shortfalls anyhow, in my mind. So that's been set aside for capital improvements in the first place. So,
anyway. And it's an investment. If that we don't make, we can spend the $500,000 or whatever it is today, or spend $1.5 million 2 years from now to actually fix that thing.
Yes, I think that's a very important point.
Okay, I guess I'm good with this. Appreciate the work that you guys did at Public Works to prioritize these things, and I guess I'd be ready to move forward with these.
Fine by me. I can make a motion. Do you have anything else, Doug?
Yeah, so I just had a question. So Ray, probably you, so then and Steve, so Steve's not here, the remodel and the rest, you know, so we talked about that, and Tim wasn't here last week when we talked about that. So we're still looking at a fall project through and being able to bid that thing, and then probably an April occupancy. Isn't that correct, what we were looking at?
Yeah, so we the actual date that we had estimated was completion in April of 2021, and then move in May of 2021.
Yeah. We'll have more space for public health.
I don't know.
Those three offices that we're adding over at the communication center. Sorry, Doug, that's going to be a no. We still need that building across the street before we're going to have a full-time
room
for public health. Okay, Mr. Chairman, I move to approve the budget requests for certain capital projects that were cut from the 2020 budget during the budget revision process due to COVID-19. Those capital projects are a partial completion of the remodel of the former communication center at $300,000, an asphalt overlay for a total of 3 miles of road to include County Road 18 and County Road 36, $520,000. Gravel for shouldering for County Road 18 and 36, 6 lane miles total, $25,000. Chip and seal of 3 miles of road to include County Road 129, $105,000. Road striping of sections of County Road 36 to be overlaid and 129 to be chip and sealed, $11,000. Crack sealing of paved roads throughout the county at $15,000.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion?
Just noting that this will end up requiring a supplemental budget.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. On a side note, totally side note, talking about Service Creek, when I met with the land managers, Chris Middledorf informed me that at Service Creek, and I think it's already started, that in order to access that trailhead, you need to have a hunting or a fishing license.
That's starting in 2020 for a lot of state land trust areas and the like, that you'll start needing a fishing license for the stuff that you traditionally didn't need to pay, like a fee at a state park or anything. So this now reaches out to state trusts, state wildlife areas, and the like.
Yeah. So, all right. Thank you very much. We will see you guys later.
All right. Thanks,
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We're ready to move on to the balance of our COVID-19 discussion. I have a couple of small things, but I'll let you guys go first.
I really don't have anything other than what we talked about earlier. So, again, following up on that, that sounds good.
I don't believe I have anything either.
So just for clarification, because this has always been a little bit confusing to me, I occasionally I get a request from a constituent that's planning some kind of an event. And I know that the advice is that I should simply refer that person to environmental health. Is that correct?
I think you should avoid referring them to environmental health unless absolutely necessary. I think you should first refer them to take a look at our information. But I think you want them to email that county info email address, because then they can be referred appropriately rather than all those questions going directly to Scott. Robin, is that the preferred process?
Yeah, and there's now a forms. We have a web page now that has stuff about events. If they go under local resources under a website, there's something called forms, and it has all the information about events.
Perfect. So yeah, I did this one individual. I said you need to go number one to the safer at home public health order from the state, which practically is going to guide their gathering limits, correct?
Yes, and we have that all outlined. If you want, while you're talking, I'll pull it up just so you see it. I showed it to Beth, but...
You know, sometimes our website can be a little bit confusing to navigate to, or maybe not confusing so much as you have to be patient and work your way through some stuff to get to exactly what you might be looking for.
So can you see my screen? Can you guys see it?
Yes.
Okay, so if you see under resources and you go under forms, see this new thing here? You click on forms. So it has all the information. So for businesses, what they have to do, and for event organizers, so there's a link to the Colorado Safer at Home, the outdoor guidelines, the indoor guidelines from the state orders, our public health order. And then we have the forms for the Route County site mitigation form and the self-gathering form. So they can just click that and fill it in. And then it goes to Deanna and I. And then we've, with Scott, we've created a, just a place where we're putting all the self-certification forms. So this has really a lot of good information, and we put stuff from the CDC and CDPHE, like, for example, what to do when an employee has suspected or confirmed COVID-19 case, suggestions for communicating with customers. So like we have the Chamber and Main Street Steamboat did the Route County Reopens poster, the Cover Your Nose and Mouth poster, the five commitment postcards if they want to print them out themselves. And then we did a sample contact tracing log as well. So pretty much you have everything right here at your fingertips that you can just print out yourself.
Robin, side note, I saw the state put out their own signage. I don't think it's required, but you could post a link to that there too if you wanted, about masks being required.
They did? Oh, okay, great. Yeah. I'll look for that.
Yeah, thank you, Robin. That I think that answers all the questions that this individual is going to need. So
okay,
I will guide them to this. And And then they don't need to contact environmental health. Perfect. That's all I had, I guess. Mark, did you have anything you needed to update us on?
No, Commissioner.
I'm sorry, I actually do have one other thing. Mark, I guess we can talk offline about this too. I am feeling like I'm having a little bit of trouble getting what I need from Carrie on the Protect Our Neighbors planning grant. I heard her say the other day that she submitted one for Moffitt County, and I've tried to follow up with her and I've asked her when I can get the information. And I feel like at this point I'm just harassing her. But I do think there is something needed from her before we can go anywhere with that. And especially considering that she already did it for Moffitt County, I'm not sure what the hang up is, except that she doesn't have a lot of time, which I understand, but I maybe could use some help, just pinning her down on that. And it doesn't have to be tomorrow, but I've had a hard time getting an answer from her on when she thinks she could get that to me.
Yeah. Beth or Commissioner Melton, there's a number of things that I think, and I'm working on putting together a list that we're going to need from that department. They have a number of contracts, which I'm sure you're aware of, where they're supposed to be submitting data on a regular basis. We do not, I mean, in talking to Eric, we do not have copies of those. So I have no idea, you know, what we are supposed to be submitting for these nine agreements. And so that to me is a pretty important thing that we're gonna need to get as well. So I'm putting together a list and I will provide you all with probably a spreadsheet of the different roles, what they're doing, and where, with what little information we have, where I see that there's gaps. But I think that when it comes to some of these statutes or agreements where we're absolutely required to carry out things, we really need to have a clear idea of what our role is.
So I would, thanks, Kathy. And I am familiar with those contracts and I agree it's important for there to be continuity. I would just be careful about not getting the commissioners too far in the weeds on that. I mean, that would just be okay. My caution. If you guys could take care of that and just let us know, I think that would probably be preferable.
Yep, thank you.
I'd agree, I'm good.
That's it. So Mark, I just wanted to make that request, thank you.
So
Robin seems to have something she'd like to tell us.
Okay, great. Go ahead, Robin.
I wanted to share my screen again just to show you something, just because it's been, we talked about it on the recovery call. So you probably heard on the federal level that hospital data is no longer going to the CDC and now is going to HHS. But we've had a challenge ever since I started. UC Health has a protocol kind of their system wide of how they collect hospitalization data, and I've been asking for hospitalization data since March, and I never get it. So I reached out to UC Health again. I know Dr. Harrington is talking about it, but if you remember, usually on Wednesdays, Dr. Harrington says in his Board of Health documents the amount of hospitalizations we've had. Like, for example, we had two that were discharged this week, but I never get the data. So in full transparency, because I don't really feel like that Rock County should be taking the responsibility that, you know, we can't get the data, I just wanted to show you that on the website, I have just wrote hospitalization data is collected by UC Health Yampa Valley Medical Center. Just wanted to let you know, I'm hoping that this will get resolved sometime soon, that we'll get the hospitalization data, but just in case you hear from constituents or others, we're trying to be as transparent as possible, but we can't report data that we don't get. So I just wanted to let you know.
On that point, I did chat with Dr. Harrington a little bit yesterday. He said the only reason he knows that data is from working at the hospital. It's not because it's being given to him. So
Right. I realize that. I know that. And I know he's
No, I just underscoring your point, Robin. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's a challenge.
Yeah, to underscore a little bit more. That's been the frustration all along. So, okay, yeah, we got 86 cases. Well, how many of those 86 cases actually went to the doctor? I mean, how many of those 86 went to the hospital? And then, you know, we know that there's not been, I mean, none of those that, you know, that have not been out of Casey's Pond have passed away. So I guess that is a little frustration on, I think, the whole community, and myself included, is that we really don't, you can't paint the whole picture because you don't have all the colors. So.
Well, Ryan, if I understand it, Beth, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, part of the Protect Our Neighbors is having that hospitalization data. So, you know, how is it?
No, I don't think so, actually. I think it's the hospital creating an assurance that they can handle the case.
Okay, so it's just the capacity.
They can self-certify on that. I mean, the concern about hospitalization data is about privacy, right? We're a small community, and if there's one hospitalization and we report that, then, oh, well, my neighbor was in the hospital, and so I understand why there's some reticence and some challenge, but I agree with you, Robin. And I mean, letters to the editor from people who are kind of rabble rousers in the first place, spouting conspiracy theories, should not be our cause for action. But I do agree with you that we should be clear on the fact that we don't actually have that data. I also think we should be really clear on the fact that we're not going to wait until our hospital is at 90% capacity before we try to reduce the spread of the virus. The point is preventing that, not only taking action when we're at that emergency tipping point. And I think that's also what should be emphasized. The low numbers are a good thing, not a bad thing. I early on in this whole thing, I read something that has stuck with me, which is like, it is amazing the number of smart people who work in finance and investment and business who don't understand exponential growth. And the fact is, if we get to that point of exponential growth, that's the wrong time to act. So sorry, that's a little bit of a rant, but you know, the governor did share yesterday that our current, that growth rate, that R0, they think is between 1.6 and 1.78 on a statewide basis right now. If it gets to 2, that's really means we're past the tipping point. So I think we just have to emphasize that it's not saying, oh, there haven't been very many hospitalizations. Well, they lag behind the increase in cases, just by definition. So anyway, thanks for listening to my rant, friends.
Oh, but the other side though, Beth, too, I still don't understand. I mean, yeah, we have these numbers and the rest, and yet we don't know that any of these guys went to, and then we have to listen to, you know, CBS News, it's, you know, at 7 or 6 o'clock, you know, and they talk about Florida and California and Arizona and the rest. And well, the ICUs are overmaxed and the rest. And so there's a missing link here somewhere for all of us to put together about, you know, how many of these, you know, and I don't even care if it's locally, but you know, and then I talked to other people that said, well, you know, I had COVID and no, I'm certifiably had COVID. It tested positive. And, you know, I'm talking to 3 or 4 guys that actually had it. And I, you know, I'm just trying to get my arms around all this stuff about how, you know, the negative sides of it and trying to, you know, and you're right. I mean, so we have the other people that, well, this is all blown up conspiracy. You know, and the rest, well, because nobody's going to the hospital. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know because we don't know how many people are going to the hospital out of the 86. So
here's my editorial comment. You're absolutely right, Doug. There is a missing link here somewhere, and it's called national leadership. that's the missing link. So I'll leave it at that.
I would also just say, I think it will be really beneficial once we have an epidemiologist and a data person on board, because right now we're relying on Robin and comments from the community to tell us what data is the most important and the most relevant. And I think people read and see either the statewide data or the national data. The fact of the matter is our numbers are so much smaller here that the same data isn't always valid in terms of understanding what's going on. Because, you know, if you take it on a statewide basis, you can't just then take that data, that's those same numbers, and apply it at a local basis and think it's equally valid for the same understanding. So I think it'll be really helpful to have someone who really understands the epidemiological side of things and can help us at a local level decide which data is most important and most relevant, rather than having to try to rely on extrapolating that from state and national information. Because I love you, Robin, but that, you know, that's not your area of expertise, right?
Well, I'm not an epidemiologist. No, I'm not. But I have dealt with public health data for 12 years, so do know that. What I just wanted to alert you to two more things, if I may, is that one, I wanted to make sure that you're getting the Friday newsletter that I put out. I resend it on Monday to non-openers, but that has, you know, I put a lot of information from the week in there, links to articles as well. So hopefully you're getting that. Our list continues to grow, and I'm happy to say that now our list is growing with second homeowners as well. So that's good. And then second, I was just approached yesterday by the city, and I'm going to find out more on Monday, but just wanted to let you know that the Arts Council wants to put an art project together about the five commitments. And so with local artists, so I'm going to explore that more, but I'm just thinking if we can use culture to get our messages out as well, and art, and not just, coming from public health, that will be helpful. So I'll keep you posted on that, but just wanted to let you know. And that's all I have. Thank you.
All right. Anybody have anything else?
So Eric's on the phone. I have a quick question for him. So I was looking through his timesheets last night. So this is a public question. So the state had an elected payroll deduction donation bill that was in the works. Did it run through? Did it get approved? Because I see you've been looking at it, so in your log. So
that was work in a different context. One of you, should I tell you who? May have been underpaid her first year. And we were trying to fix that situation. And so I had to research what the legislation says about, and it's kind of, it's not really addressed how people are paid, but it's very clear to me that the statute sets forth the annual salary for you all.
What was she underpaid, Eric? I wasn't aware of this issue.
You're not going to get a bonus check, but you're going to get paid. You were paid a little late because you were sworn in on the 8th.
I was aware of that. And so the annual pay should have like made up for those 8 days or whatever.
Yeah, so when you
Merry Christmas.
If you'll get paid.
It won't be that much. It's no. All good.
Thanks, I got to get on another call.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Well, she can just donate half of her salary back because she's only working half time. So.
No, Tim, I only work like quarter time.
Quarter time, yeah. So.
Yeah. I'm just hanging out over here.
Yeah, I guess my editorial comment on that, and I don't know if you've heard me say this before, but when I first got elected in 2012, I really thought that. And thought I could run my business and be a county commissioner at the same time. And that was, I was painfully wrong about that. So, all right. Do we have anything else, Mark?
Nope. I think you might have seen I'm proposing a moratorium on bad jokes as a public health risk. So just.
So quoting Yogi Berra is not a bad joke. That is philosophy. Right.
No, it's really Eric and Dr. Harrington that are for this one.
Okay.
So just take that under consideration.
Well, it won't apply to me because I never tell a bad joke. So. All right.
Well, I do, and I get caught at them quite often.
All right. I think we've done enough damage for one day, and I propose that we shut it down. You all have a great weekend, and we will see you on Monday.
Thanks, Tim.